filmů, bojí se desek a pásků, bojí se spisovatelů a básníků, bojí se novinářů, bojí se herců, bojí se malířů a sochařů, bojí se hudebníků a zpěváků, bojí se rozhlasových stanic, bojí se televizních družic, bojí se volného toku informací, bojí se zahraniční literatury a tisku, bojí se technického pokroku, bojí se tiskáren, xeroxů a cyklostylů, bojí se psacích strojů, bojí se telefot a telexů, bojí se automatického telespojení, bojí se dopisů, bojí se telefonů, bojí se pustit lidi ven, bojí se pustit lidi sem, bojí se levice, bojí se pravice, bojí se odchodu sovětských vojsk, bojí se moskevských změn, bojí se zmírnění napětí, bojí se odzbrojení, bojí se smluv, které podepsali, bojí se svých podpisů, bojí se svý vlastní policie, bojí se výzvu, bojí se kvůli těm fízlům, bojí se šachistů, bojí se tenisu, bojí se hokejistů, bojí se gymnastek, bojí se svatýho Václava, bojí se mistra Jana Husy, bojí se všech svatých, bojí se svatýho Mikuláše, bojí se Ježíška, bojí se Batohůra Sošelenina, bojí se archivů, bojí se historiků, bojí se ekonomů, bojí se sociologů, bojí se filozofů, bojí se fyziků, bojí se lékařů, bojí se politických vězňů, bojí se rodin vězněných, bojí se dnešního večera, bojí se zítřejšího rána, bojí se dnes a denně, bojí se budoucnosti, bojí se minulosti, bojí se infarktů a cirózy, bojí se dokonce i nepatrných stopy svědomí, která v nich možná zůstala. Bojí se ze svých hraních gétech, bojí se svých rodin, bojí se svých příbuzných, bojí se svých někdejších přátel a soudruhů, bojí se svých současných přátel a soudruhů, bojí se jeden druhýho, bojí se toho, co řekli, bojí se toho, co napsali, bojí se o svým postavení, bojí se světla i tmy. se vtip. Bojí se poctivosti. Bojí se čestnosti. Bojí se vzdělaný. Bojí se nadaný. Bojí se Marxe. Bojí se Lenina. Bojí se všech našich mrtvých prezidentů. Bojí se pravdy. Bojí se svobody. Bojí se demokracie. Bojí se chartě lidských práv. Bojí se socialismu.
Every once in a while. of the money bag.
Leave my woman troubles far behind. Gonna leave the city. Leave my woman troubles far behind. One day she says she loved me, next day treat me so unkind. I hop down to the station, I get me a leaving ticket just one way. I hop down to the station, I get me a leaving ticket just one way. Can't stay. One time she says she loved me, next day she say, little boy, go away.
I'm picking away, the way I pick is what I say, yeah.
But every once in a while it becomes a drag, so I come down off the money bag.
It's the truth, boy.
You grew up in Kentucky. What was your...
I was an army brat.
Okay. What was your first crime?
First crime was shoplifting. My mom, and I've spoken about this a few times, but I'm from Eastern Kentucky. Hazard is coal country. My dad was coming out of the military. He was a captain in the Army, helicopter pilot. Army downsizes, he gets booted out. He goes back to mining coal, is what he does, strip mining. So a bulldozer operator is what he was doing. My mom was a nurse, an LPN, and she worked long enough to see Dad off to work, and then she would go out, and we call it whoring around. She would go out and party with other men, just horrible stuff, and just abuse out the wazoo. I remember one time, me and my sister come home. I was probably 8 or 9, my sister a year younger, and we the bus drops us off. The hood of the car is up, so we walk by like, that's odd. We walk in, Denise asks Mom.
So we walk in, Mom is sitting on the sofa in the living room with her legs crossed, acting all chill. I was like, what's wrong? What's up?
Yeah.
Where's Dad? I don't know, she said. I look on the floor and I see like pieces of marble broken off. The TV is pulled out from the wall. And I was like, what is this?
So there's some spaghetti on the stove. We go to get some. And Mom's like, no, don't touch that. Don't touch that. That's for your father. Well, what had happened was my mom had cut the spark plug wires on the car so Dad couldn't get away. She cuts the cable behind the TV so that when he goes to turn the TV on, there's no signal. You know, you just got the snow on there. So he gets behind the TV trying to see what's going on. As he bends over the TV, she takes a marble statue, clocks him in the head with it. The spaghetti on the stove had rat poison in it.
So he had ended up walking, I forget how many miles, to the hospital. And he still has a piece of that marble, like, in his skull.
Right.
But of course, with us, her story when we'd gotten home was, I don't know where he is.
I don't know.
I don't know why that's on the floor.
That was my mom, and this is not atypical. I remember that when my dad, the one time he tried to divorce her, me and my dad were living in an apartment. My mom had my sister. My mom climbs in the window of the apartment. I wake up hearing this, you know, this noise in the living room. Walk in, and my mom's got a knife to my dad's throat, threatening to kill him. That was my mom. So, and she was a criminal. So,
what was she so bent on killing him for?
My mom's problem was she always, and it's weird with her. I think it's because of the way she grew up. She grew up abused as well. But her issue is that she always had to test people's love. If I do this to you, will you still love me? If I sleep around on you, will you still love me? If I threaten to kill you, will you still love me? If I abuse the kids or neglect the kids, will they still love me? My dad was so crazy about my mom that he put up with it, and he became the enabler of the family. He was scared of losing her. But I get the worst parts from mom and dad. From my mom, I get that criminal mindset. From my dad, I get that fear of the people that I love leaving me. And that's a lot of the reason that I break crime historically. It's for cash, but I use cash to buy love.
These are true stories from the dark side of the internet. I'm Jack Reesider. This is Darknet Diaries.
Hey everyone, it's me, Simone Biles. As a world champion gymnast and a former foster kid, I've faced my fair share of complexity, and I've learned that the concept of controlling complexity is about more than just overcoming our own hardships. It's about helping others overcome theirs too. After all, in the face of enormous complexity, the best not only find a way to adapt to the challenge, they also find a way to give back. From now until the end of the year, Axonius will make a donation to Friends of the Children for every demo completed. For more details and to sign up, go to axonius.com/friends. That's axonius.com/friends.
So today we're going to hear the wild and crazy story of Brett Johnson. This is one of those stories that I was very skeptical at first. Like, no way did he do all this. But after talking with some people who knew him and reading all the police reports, it checks out. Oh, and I should mention there are a fair bit of swear words in this episode, and it has some adult and mature content. So, fair warning. Brett grew up in a weird situation. His dad was no stranger to doing illegal things. For instance, his dad was a helicopter pilot in the military, and one time his dad tried to sell some stolen hand grenades. And after the military, his dad tried running drugs back and forth to Mexico as a helicopter pilot. And at one point, he even tried becoming a cop with the sole idea that he was going to do a drug bust and somehow keep the money he confiscated. When all those plans fizzled out and the family had no money, that's when Brett's mom decided to take the kids and run.
At that point in time, we were in Panama City, Florida. My mom leaves my dad. Me and Denise thought we were coming up to Kentucky for a funeral, and we weren't. Well, I mean, there was a funeral, but we thought we were only going to be gone a week. So we packed enough clothes for a week. My dad thought we were only going to be gone for a week, and I don't see my dad again for, 10 years, something like that.
His mom took the kids and moved to Panama City, Florida, and they moved in with her parents. Her dad was just as crazy, super strict, and pretty abusive. Just to give you an idea, they weren't allowed to eat any of Grandpa's food, and they weren't allowed to make any noise after dark. And he was very strict on how much water they could use. For instance, he wouldn't even let them fill up the bathtub. And both Brett and his sister Denise did not want to be around Grandpa when he gets angry.
We had no soap.
Right.
We had really very little clothes. I mean, two pairs of panties. And you weren't allowed to wash them.
Or you'd have to wash them by hand.
there was that, you know. I remember going over to Pizza Hut and stealing the soap from Pizza Hut so I could bring it back and wash my underwear in the sink with the soap. You know, but I had to be careful because if he knew I was doing that, I was wasting water and that would set him off. And if you set him off, his goal was to kill you.
And it was. I mean, we had that round table in the kitchen upstairs in their house. And there were times when he would get the butcher knife on you and you'd do the little dance around the table until he got tired. And then he would finally sit down and he would look at you and say, "Don't let me catch you, I'll kill you."
Or he'd get really upset and then he'd go looking for his gun. And that's time for you to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'd leave for a while and come back in a few hours.
Your parents are sorrier than whale shit, and we should not have to feed you.
And they didn't want to feed us.
No.
So, Mom had been gone for a few days. She started partying, using drugs, everything else like she was doing. We didn't have any food in the house, and, you know, I was the guy that was scared that Mom wasn't going to come home because she'd tell us that we'd find her dead someplace, that she was going to commit suicide, that she'd have given up her life for us, everything else. So she'd been gone. I'm worried she's not coming back. Denise never worried at all. Denise was just always mad at her. We were living downstairs for my grandfather. He had converted the downstairs into apartments, and we weren't allowed to go upstairs to eat. They just wouldn't let us. And this one time, I was 10. My sister Denise was 9. So Denise walks in one day, and she's got a pack of pork chops in her hand. And I was like, "Where'd you get that?" And she was like, "I stole it." And I'm like, "Show me how you did that, sister." So she takes me over to A&P, and she shows me how she's stuffing, you know, meat and everything down her pants. And I'm like, "Well, we can eat." So we start stealing food, and we look across the way because we were wanting to make sandwiches. That's the actual story, is we were wanting to make sandwiches. Well, you can't stuff a loaf of bread down your pants. Well, Kmart was across the way, so we went over there and stole a hoodie so we could stuff bread down the sleeves of the hoodie. That's when we found out, hey, we can shoplift clothes, and then books, games, jewelry, toys, all that stuff. Mom finally comes home and sees, you know, the new Intellivision that I'm playing and everything else. And where'd that come from? And I looked at her and said, "Oh, we found it." And she's like, "No, you didn't find that." Denise stands up, never lies at all. Denise stands up, "We stole it." My mom looks at my sister, she's like, "Show me how you did it." Not only does she join us, but she goes and gets her mom to join us as well. So it's grandmother, mom, me, and my sister taking these road trips to different malls to steal clothes. And, well, they stole clothes and jewelry. I'd always go to the bookstore first and steal books because I like to read a lot. And we were at the Fort Henry Thomas Mall in Bristol, Tennessee. They had dropped me off at the B. Dalton bookstore. They had went in JCPenney's, and we were supposed to meet back at the vehicle, I think, like at 1:30. Well, I came back with a load of books. Nobody's there. So I'm standing around about 30 minutes like, "Okay, where are they?" And I'm only like 10. So I'm like, "Where are they?" So I wait a while. Finally, I'm like, "Okay, I got to go in and find them." So I stuff the books under the blazer, walk into JCPenney's. As I'm walking in, there's two security guards standing right in the entryway there. And I hear my name, Brett Johnson, come over one of the walkie-talkies. And I'm like, "Hey, that's me." And they're like, "That's you?" And I was like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Come with us." So I go, they take me to the security room, and my mom and grandmother, they're huddled in a corner, crying, screaming, telling everybody they didn't do it, didn't mean to. This is the first time we've ever done it. Denise is in the opposite corner. I mean, Denise is ballistic, just angry, staring holes through like she could kill them right there. That's the first crime that I committed there.
That marked the end of his sister's criminal behavior. She totally stopped shoplifting after that. But this was the beginning of Brett's criminal career. He continued to shoplift and steal, never getting caught for it either. And he watched as his mom did criminal acts too. His mom was shoplifting, and he learned she was drug trafficking, and she would sometimes call random people to try to get them to donate to a charity, but they were really just giving her money instead. And this is called charity fraud. She even tried to steal heavy equipment sometimes. She was kind of an opportunistic criminal, getting involved with whatever came her way, and Brett was watching it all. And after some years of this, Brett started talking with his dad again, but only over the phone. His dad had his own issues. He was breaking the law and stuff too. And when Brett was 15, he got his first taste of jail.
When I was 15, I was in Eastern Kentucky. My my dad had called. I'd called him, and he said he was getting married. And I was always of the opinion that I was going to, you know, that Dad was going to save us. So he said he was getting married. I went to the I was at the hospital on a payphone there. Got in an elevator and ended up assaulting a woman that got on the elevator with me. I just, I guess I snapped or whatever. I don't know. I don't know. I was 15 at that point. I was charged with assault in the first degree. So they put me in solitary for 6 months.
Why do you think the news from your father getting married caused this?
I think that was the last, and I don't think it caused it. I think that it was, looking back now, I think that I had taken mentally as much as I could, because it turns out the woman looked a lot like Mom. So I think that I had just, with that final news of Dad, I think that... I'd always been the guy that thought I was going to, you know, it took me to save me. And I've lived my entire life like that. If you're going to do something, do it yourself. But when I heard that from him, I think that child in me, that small part of having hope of somebody saving me was finally gone. And maybe I realized that that just wasn't going to happen. So I don't like to make excuses for that. Because it was a horrible, horrible thing, and I've lived my life. I mean, every single day I've thought about that, and I wanted to mention that because I think it's important. I think it's important to the story and everything.
This is going to be a heavy episode. Brett pleads guilty to this assault and goes to juvenile detention for a few months, and starts attending high school in Hazard, Kentucky. This is where he finds a teacher who saw potential in Brett. He excelled in academics and drama in high school, and because he was doing well, he actually stayed away from crime, for the most part. He graduated high school and wanted to be an actor, and he had some scholarship offers, but ended up just going to the community college there. He gets a part in a play, then the head of the theater department from the San Jose State University in California came to see his play and saw Brett's performance.
As soon as he sees it, he comes up to me and he's like, I'll give you a full ride scholarship if you want to come to San Jose State right now. And I looked at him, I was like, done, let's do this. So I agree to the scholarship. He tells me it's going to be great. He actually says, hey, you're a big fish in a small pond. I'll make sure you're a big fish in a big pond. You'll go someplace. So I was like, let's do this. So he's like, I'll be back in a week. So he leaves, he flies back down in a week. He drives to my house. We were living in Airport Gardens at that point. I'm shooting basketball with some friends. He pulls up. I come over to meet him. I was like, hey, let me walk in and I'll introduce you to my mom. And he's like, no. He said, I can go in and meet her. I was like, all right. So he goes in and he's in there, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, something like that. He comes out, never says a word, gets in the car, leaves. And I didn't know what had happened. Find out, I don't know, a couple weeks later, I find out that my mom, he goes in to meet her and talk to her and tell her, you know, the opportunity that I've gotten, everything else like that. She pulls a knife on him and says, you know, I will, she had this line she used to say, she said, I will cut you from gizzard to sternum, and you're not going to steal my son from me. That scares the man to death. And of course, the scholarship and all that goes out the window at that point. That, I don't know, I guess part of that kind of broke me, of leaving.
There were similar problems going on with his sister. She was older by this point and going to college too, but her mom had a tight grip on her and didn't want her to go away and was doing very manipulative things to keep her. But the people at the college, about 90 minutes away, saw a glimpse of what Denise was going through and gave her a full scholarship and a place to stay and even protected her. This gave Denise the chance she needed to escape the bad gravity of her mom and get an education and get on her feet. She became a teacher, and a pretty good one, winning Teacher of the Year even, and she stayed clear of any criminal behavior.
So I continued in community college, had a girlfriend that was a preacher's daughter, and those were very, very decent people. For the most part, I didn't think about breaking the law or anything else. That relationship fell apart after 5 years, and I met my first wife. Her name was Susan. Wanted out, Susan wanted out of home, out of Hazard, Kentucky, and I knew that I kind of used that as a...
expectations fall like glass upon the floor. I'm all out of dopamine, I'm begging you for more. Despite my drive and effort, I have feeble broken plans. Gravity gains density, now I can barely stand. I'm happy, I just can't shake this futile dream. Absorption of my self-esteem, ventilation dulls my glossy sheen. I'm happy, I'm happy. This soul is staring at its seams. He's stitched another broken dream. No burns, but I'm all out of steam. I'm happy, at least that's how I dark eyes hobbling on a broken leg. Brain fog, cute dog, take it till there's nothing left. Intrusion, confusion, invasion of your life and home. Thank you for your hospitality. Now it's time we roam. I'm happy, I'm happy. I'm happy, I'm happy. I just can't shake this futile dream. Absorption of my self-esteem. Shake this futile dream. I'm sorting on my self-esteem. Ventilation dulls my pulsation. I'm happy, I'm happy. This soul is staring at a seams. He's stitching on the broken dream. Cold burns, but I'm all out of steam. I'm happy, at least that's how I seem. At least that's how I seem. At least that's how I seem. At least that's how I seem.
That's how I seem. Shut up.